हरि
सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 22 सूत्र 132 मुक्तो पासरिप्या व्यापरेशात् मुक्ता लिबरेटेड उपासरिप्या अटेनिंग Vyapare chat, because of the statement. It refers to the Lord because he is attained by liberated souls. Sutra Prakashika. This sutra supports the conclusion established in the previous sutra by citing one of Brahman's unique characteristics, that of being the one to which liberated souls go. This, by definition, cannot denote either Pradhan or Jiva, right? Because point is the Jivas aren't going to go to Jiva, or they're not going to go to Pradhan, you know, or Pradhan's not going to Jiva, you know, it's just like this, it goes around. So the only one is Brahman's the only one that the Jivas and Pradhan attain. Does that make sense? So, yeah. The expression Upasaripya from the sutra, that which is to be approached, signifies not only something that is reached by another, but also that being has no beyond. Right? So that means there's nothing beyond the Lord, because that's the natural position that people try to take, especially the atheists. Okay, well, then where does this come from? It comes from God. Where does God come from? The point is no. He's the one that there isn't anything beyond. So he doesn't come from something because there's nothing beyond him. Right?
Yeah. They claim that this refers to Pradhan. Means there's nothing beyond Pradhan in their mind?
That's the problem that comes up. See, is that if you're attached to something and you're in a argument, it's not about finding out the truth, but about maintaining your attachment. You understand? Then you don't mind not using logic properly. You'll use logic as far as it supports what you're doing, but where it doesn't support, then you won't use it. So that's always going to come up, is that the impersonalist, because of that attachment, or the Mayavadis, because of the attachment. Impersonalists may think of it this way, but once you explain it to them, they'll understand beyond, they can go beyond. So there's a chance there. So impersonalists may understand this, Mayavadis don't. Shri Govinda Bhashya. There's another reason. Mukto pasripya vyapare shat. It refers to the Lord because he is attained by liberated souls. Later in the same Upanishad it is said, Yada pashya pashyate urukma varanam niranjana paramam samyam upaiti. When the seer sees the golden person, he, being pure, attains a form similar to the Lord, or similar to the Supreme. Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.3. He who is attained by the liberated souls can only be Brahman. So they can only attain that, get a form like, because it's not that the living entity will get a form like Pradhan. Right? But if we say a form like Brahman, then we can see a weakness there is that Brahman meaning unlimited, how does the limited become unlimited? You say you merge, but the point is something that merges still is part of that. Green bird goes into a green tree, there's still a tree and there's a bird, not that the bird suddenly just starts getting fatter and fatter until it becomes the size of the tree. Right? Like that. So it remains like that. So that means then the Lord himself must have a form. And then that kind of form, the transcendental form, then the jiva, the liberated jiva, having attained the Lord, can attain that same kind of form. So,
why does it mention golden person? Because we earlier saw golden person was Surya Narayan in the
same planet. Yeah, but wasn't Surya Narayan established as supreme?
Yes.
So we're discussing the same points, but just like we said, is in one thing here. The seer, that's a point of discussion, right? When, that's time. Sees, what does seeing mean? Seer and seeing. What is the golden person? Who's that? Being pure, what's actually pure? Right? You know, attains. What does that mean? Form. Supreme. All these things are that. So that's why we're going through all these from different points. So that they can all, the different aspects can be done. Because we're only quoting the same Upanishads, basically the same verses. But it's different aspects of the same thing. See? Bhagavatam verse reference. The liberated souls know the goal of Vedic Dharma to be the Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-40. O unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavat Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, who are self-realized sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. Footnote 12. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse. Bhagavad Dharma is the process of religion enunciated by pure devotees. Direct representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Narada, Sukadev Goswami, and their humble servants in the disciplic succession. By understanding Bhagavad Dharma, one immediately becomes free from material contamination. Living entities who are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are loitering in this material world, suffering. When they are instructed by the Lord himself about Bhagavad Dharma, and they adopt it, that is victory for the Lord, for he then reclaims these fallen souls. Right? So that's the purpose of the creation, is to reclaim these fallen souls. So then for him, that's considered a victory. Right? It's not that it's a great achievement in the way of mechanical, but it's an achievement in the way of relationship. Because for the Lord, that's what's most important. Right? Reestablishing these relationships. A devotee following the principles of Bhagavad Dharma feels very much obligated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can understand the difference between life without Bhagavad Dharma and life with Bhagavad Dharma. And thus he ever remains obliged to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-40. So that's an important aspect, is that he can understand and he ever remains. So that means he's not just understanding it and then forgetting about it. Right? The point is we have a material contamination. Right? This material contamination, then we tend to perceive things in a particular way in connection with sense gratification. Now, when we perceive the Lord, right, we can understand the difference between life with Bhagavad Dharma and without. Then the proper position is that, therefore, we remain on that. We don't go back to the other. So then here it's talking about those pure devotees. So the pure devotees means they remain there. They don't go back. So when they have that realization about the Lord and his position and how you could be absorbed in the Lord in that particular situation, they don't go back to that previous position, you know, you'll call your purva samskar, of seeing it in connection with sense gratification. So because of that, then they become, yes.
It means that those pure devotees at least should be on the level of nishtha.
Yes, but even he means, yes, that would be, it would be predominant, though there'd be sometimes going out, but where it would be, where this aspect, they would be, in other words, they would be fixed in devotional service and see that benefit there. But he says he ever obliged to the Lord himself, means as a person, that's going to come when they get that taste in devotional service. Yeah, because then they give up all interest in sense gratification. So then they're absorbed in the Lord. So then that takes them further more. And then from that, then they develop that attachment. Right? So that just natural. It means if you're steady, then you can start to see the difference. Seeing the difference, then practicing that difference, then one comes to the point of getting a taste. Having gotten the taste, that will fix one. That will bring one to attachment.
If I understood correctly, that on the level of nishtha, there is not much a chance of going back to pull the samskaras. Shouldn't be.
No, not so much, but there can be. But the point is it's not necessarily that going back will deviate them from their service. Because having seen the difference, then when they go back, it's just how you say, shows more the difference. You understand? Well, if one's below that level, going back into those things, that may distract one. But if you've already had the understanding, the taste of that higher principle, then going back, it's more stark, the difference. So, does that make sense? That's why they're on a different level, like someone like Bilba Mangal Thakur. So going from the one into the other, then when it's pointed out, then he can go back much more strongly. But we see in others, when that happens, they're gone. Like that. So that's why it's always recommended you don't play with it. It's like fire. You don't play with it, because if something goes wrong, then the devastation is very great. Does that make sense? So, based on that, because they are fixed, then if something does go wrong, then to get them back on track is not so difficult. But at the same time, you don't want to risk it. Right? So that's why it's not done. So even those on the Uttama platform, they don't play around with it, because one, there's no interest in it, so they wouldn't play with it. And two, if they're preaching and all that, to set proper example, they're also good. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You're saying that obligation really starts at dasyaras.
No, because obligation, even in Shanta, there's that obligation that they're always obliged to just that mercy of the Lord. Because on Shanta, you can come to the platform of prema. You won't go above that, because it's just basically the experience of prema. It's not dynamic, but it's not that it's not full, right? Because we see that in chapters in the Bhagavatam, where Krishna is explaining to Balaram how the whole Vrindavan is there and is serving him and everything like that. So all the trees, the birds, the cows, the other animals, they're all in Shanta, right? But the absorption is very great. So that obligation is there, that affection is there. It's just it becomes more dynamic. When it intensifies, then it becomes dynamic as dasya. That intensifies, then it goes into the next. Does that make sense? So on this platform, this is how the discussion. When we get into the Braj Leela, then we might make some distinctions in certain aspects there. But this is not the point to make that distinction. Okay. Yes.
The thought of devotion and all these animals and things of Vrindavan, they're not mentioned as examples of devotees in Shanta.
Because what example you'll take from them? You understand? So it's not that when you're out in the lawn chewing on grass out there, and then, you know, so there's nothing like that, you know. So therefore, those in Shanta that we take example from, Narad Muni, the four Kumaras, Madhavendra Puri, like that, Sukadeva Goswami, then we take from there. When they're in human form, then we can take that example.
Also, there's like a succession, it seems to be like a progression that is described.
That's there. That's there. Progression is before. There's a non-difference, but there's a difference. Because prema is prema. But within that, the various tastes and activities that go on, there's going to be a difference. So the intensity of that, then that you can say there's a hierarchy.
And it also in the sense that devotees who come to Santa Rasa Day, the possibility to say maybe that they will move further.
Not necessarily, because they're satisfied in that rasa.
It it's not that. To me like that, that it's describing it. Maybe it's because I don't understand.
No, no. I mean, someone who's in that rasa, they're satisfied in that. They stay in that rasa. They don't adjust. So the they don't adjust. So, but it's not that someone in a higher rasa, in getting themselves to that, doesn't go through those stages like that. You understand? So they're coming from a low, they're becoming purified, and so these different symptoms manifest. Yeah, but otherwise what it's talking about is that the science of it. If you add this, you get this. If you add that, you get that. And so it's not talking about the devotees themselves. It's just talking about the science itself. The science, then if you have shanta, if you intensify that, then you'll get dasya. But that's not the individual devotee. Like that. Once they get to a position, they're satisfied there. Because otherwise, if suddenly, you know, you can imagine it, you know, the Radharani and her party go out for the rasa dance like that, and when they get out there, there's this huge herd of cows there because they've you know, come up to the point they want to dance with Krishna now also, you know. And then, you know, Jamuna's out there, you know, the sand is out there, everything's out there. It's kind of like, you know, how. So that's the point, is because
ticketing for cows, right?
Yeah. Well, they're moving in a circle around, yeah, like that. You know, and they're just ignore them. They'll go away. How long can they stand on their back legs anyway? Like that, you know. So, yeah. So, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that. Okay, so this Bhagavad Dharma then means that surrender unto the Lord. That's the whole point. That can surrender, that is to please the Lord. See, when you talk about Dharma, you're talking about the nature of something. Right? What it is. What is its inherent nature? So then, that itself being applied, then it has an effect. So then the Vedas give so many different kinds. I think it was with Prahlad Maharaj or something, described 12 different major aspects of Dharma. Your austerity, your celibacy, your varnashram, all these different things. So following these, you can elevate yourself, purify yourself, you can bring yourself up to the point of devotion. But the, you can purify yourself. It's only through devotion that you can actually gain devotion to the Lord. Now, these 12 are naturally, because they're pious, these are the recommended systems that are used in connection with devotional service. Because otherwise, what medium do you use? But the point is it's the devotion to the Lord, that's the essential point. Not something else.
So, can we say that the clearing, so that inherent devotion within can manifest?
No, it's just a medium through which to use. So there they're recommended, just like cooking, you use a pot. But it's not the pot that's manifesting the preparation. It's the cooking process itself. Now, you can say, now a pot, some are more efficient at manifesting in that, and some aren't. That's why then the recommendations given in the Vedas, that's what one should be using. Because that then will give the proper results. If using something else, like, you know, how you say, putting on your colors and with the boys going out for a ride down, you know, Highway 101, that may not, it may not actually get the result you want. You know, especially when the police show up behind you and, you know, stuff like that. You know, or another gang comes along, or you know, like yeah. that, or the screenwriter gets tired of you and, yes. and you get shot out in Florida, wherever it was that they got shot, you know, like this. So that's the whole point, is that it's not efficient method. So we can go on about this and, oh no, it doesn't matter, we're above, we're that, yeah, it means since when are we above?
Yeah.
The Veda is above, and the Veda recommends this. So why we would use something not recommended based on our own attachments and false ego?
Can you say those who are above would never say?
And those who are above wouldn't. Because the point is it's just like the example is given. That you have let's say you have the pure devotees. They have a particular conditioning they're manifesting. Now, let's say they come to the Uttama platform, then there's no reason not to follow the rules connected with that conditioning, because they have no attachments for not doing that. So they don't have attachments for doing that. They don't have attachments for not doing that. Therefore, you see, like in the Lord's pastime, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where you have devotees that are in all the different varnas and ashrams, that they're on that Uttama platform, but they don't change their position. You know, Kolabecha Sridhar can say, you know, hey, why do I have to be the guy selling bananas? You know, I could be the emperor. You know, he's not. He's selling his bananas. That's the whole thing. So he's not attached to, he's not attached to. That's the principle of sannyas. Yeah, that I gotta have this, not have that, that's lower stages. That's the actual principle, is that you don't, it doesn't matter. This is what you have, that's what you use. And so anything used in Krishna service is an advantage. But there's uniqueness. That's visesha, or that aspect of prajumna means it's unique. And so we want everything to be the same. So we talk about, oh no, but everybody's different and all that, so everybody, all their difference all has to be the same. So that's the point. In the modern liberal, everybody has to be exactly the same.
Unique in exactly the same way.
Yeah, like that. You can't be unique in a different way. Like that. So that's the whole thing. It's not actually individual. There is no visesha. But in the Vedic, there's visesha, that this one does this, that one does that, and because of that, You want to do this particular thing, you take that position. You want to do that. But the modern is, no, it doesn't matter what position I take, I can do anything. But that doesn't work. How can I be in the meeting making the PowerPoint presentation at the same time, you know, I'm bungee jumping off the roof? You can't do that. No, but why can't he do that? He can wear the little thing like that and talk on the way down. You know, that's the problem, is it makes zero sense. There's no intelligence being applied here, other than to figure out that someone's saying something different than they are. That's the only place for you.
So it's like a play without a script.
Yeah, and it's not even living theater. At least that ran for a little while, you know? Like that, you know? Like, I don't think anyone would pay. Probably living theater was free also.
You paid in a different way.
Yes. How do you say, yeah? I didn't even see that. Yes. Okay. Absorption. Okay. Does that make sense? So, therefore, pure bhakti, that surrender to Krishna, that's the actual thing. What mediums you're using, those are supportive. So when you put the emphasis on the supportive, that's a distraction. Though it's being connected to Krishna as renunciation, but it's not as efficient as if it was sannyas, where it's just about the Lord. So that's the point of that Bhagavad Dharma, that's the real thing. And then, what are you going to engage in Bhagavad? Just like cooking is the real thing. In a kitchen, cooking is the real thing. Would we have a disagreement about that? Okay? Right? I mean, some people, you know, how you say, social people, then it might not be. It's just a matter of showing off your kitchen, that your kitchen is better than their kitchen, though you never cook, they never cook. But, you know, but at least you got a better, you have better opportunity, in case you did cook, you know, then you have that, you know, how you say, that $12,000 espresso machine, though, that you don't, wouldn't have a clue how to make it work. I mean, never even plugged it in, but it's better than theirs, because theirs is only $7,000. Like that, right? And so, but if we're not talking that, we're talking actual cooking, then the point is cooking is the real thing. Now within that, now the cook will look at what are the best opportunities and best things I could use to cook with in the kitchen. So that's the point, is then the devotee will take Bhagavad Dharma as the main thing. Then of these other supportive religious or secondary religious processes, which ones are the best ones for me in my position and my nature to use to apply and express Bhagavad Dharma? That's Sarva Dharma Parityaja. Not, oh, give up anything, I can just do anything. That's called liberals. That's not religion at all. It doesn't even get there. Right? It doesn't even make it there. It only can't get past pranamoy. Right? So that's what we're talking about, is that the focus, Bhagavad Dharma means the focus is on the, that dharma. And then this other dharmas are used to support. Right? While in the beginning, when we're moving up through it in the sadhana process, especially in Vaidhi, the tendency is to focus on those secondary dharmas. And then gradually, as we get purified by the application of Bhagavad Dharma, then we start to realize Bhagavad is the main. Then we surrender to Krishna. So the whole Gita is giving us all ways to use those secondary dharmas, but it's always explained that the primary dharma is the main. And in the 18th chapter, it makes it very, very clear. Just give all those up. That doesn't mean you don't use them, but give them up as the dharma that you're applying. Right? You just say the brahmacharya, that's the one you're applying. No, how you say, Bhagavad Dharma is the one you're applying. You happen to be a brahmacharya. That's Narad Muni's like that. He's practicing Bhagavad Dharma, and the most comfortable position natural from the use is brahmacharya, same like the four kumaras. Right? But it's not the prominent thing. Right? But that you'll see others an example that they're brahmacharis. Right? And then that becomes the prominent. But they're devotees. So it means it's moving towards that. You understand the difference? You start with brahmacharya connecting to Krishna. You start with Krishna and you're using brahmacharya. It's just a matter of which way. It doesn't change the form. Right? Once you know how to practice the form properly, what it changes is where you start from. Where's the central point? Right? This is very, very important. Yes.
Can you give an example of those who are primarily brahmacharis, but then they are devotees?
Book distributors who think that if you're not out distributing books and not a brahmachari, then you're not actually a serious devotee. You may have bumped into some of those or not, especially if you were moved around in Northern Europe in days of yore. But unfortunately, they're not practicing brahmacharya or book distribution. So that's why these processes themselves, if you're connecting everything to Krishna, it's strong. But it's not as strong as it's centered on Krishna. So that's the whole point, is it's very, very nice. Okay. Now we want to get less snarky. Sukadev Goswami. No, excuse me. That's the other way around. That's the other side. No, this side you're always going to have a problem. You know, those who are more about their position, Vishwamitra. You know, because about his position, he's a Brahmarshi, Durvasa. No, they wouldn't be. Because they're beyond that. That doesn't come first. So you can always see is that when you're on this side, that there's always going to be the difficulties that come up from that secondary religion, because that's not actually the primary religion of the devotee. But then you see is as you go beyond it, then everything works out very nicely.
So the pride is real issue?
Sorry?
Pride is real issue in here?
Pride. Means you could say, means that you say false ego, because Prabhupada points out in the, what do you call it, the, what's that chapter about? Autumn, Krishna book? Hmm. You know, the one.
Description of autumn.
Description of autumn, yes. Then and there, he's describing one thing, he points out that false ego is the demarcation between material and spiritual. Hmm. Because spiritual, there is no false ego, and you require false ego to be in the material. But you can also have false ego and not be in the material. You can just be absorbed in Brahman. But the point is you can't go forward into the spiritual. You'll fall back into the material. So that point there, that's why then all these identities are given up. So when we're following these other religions, means we have the identity of that. We're connecting it to Krishna, so it's devotional service. And we're becoming purified, we're advancing. So it's a bona fide process. But unless you know that you're supposed to give that up at some point, then one won't do that. You know, like these modernistic kind of things of, oh, we're from this particular area, so therefore we should follow in this way. But the funny part is why should the whole world follow what some people do from one part? Right? You know what I'm saying? Europe, they have a different perspective. South America, different. Everybody else has a different. But somehow or another, everyone should follow that one. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we're Westerners. Since when are we Westerners? You know what I'm saying? What makes us Westerners? Like that, because of our atheistic nature, we don't like authority, we don't accept tradition. Is that the glories that make us Westerners? Because, you know, whatever pants you're wearing today, after 5 years, are not in fashion anyway. So, does that make you the Westerner? No, but why would fashion, why would food, why all that would do? Because there is no tradition, it is atheistic. Because you can say, no, we're Westerners, you only eat this. But everything that you eat as a Westerner is probably not from your place. You know what I'm saying? It's from another country. So that's the whole thing. And even the clothes and this and that, where does fashion come from? Right? It comes from France. It doesn't come from, you know, how you say, Mississippi. Like that.
Grand Island.
Yeah, yeah.
Nebraska.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sitka. Yes.
Sorry, I'm a little confused.
You're confused.
Connection to Krishna is strong, but it's different from being centered on Krishna.
The one is about what you're doing that's for Krishna. The other is it's about Krishna, and then you're doing something to express that. Just like there's someone, he likes to cook. So he's going to cook no matter what. Then you know the deities come into his existence, then he'll cook for the deities. But take out the deities, he'll still be cooking. Do you understand? Yeah. Yes.
There's this learn to walk before you can run. So it would seem that a lot of the time many devotees, they have this difficulty in introspection. They don't know either how to introspect properly or the process of introspection. How one can individually introspect in the right way so that we don't mystify ourselves. It seems that that seems to be the commonality. When we introspect and we may not even think about something, we don't catch it, it goes out, you know, we get stuck.
Yes. It's just that process that the Upanishads talk about, Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. It means that you've heard, now you'll contemplate what you've heard and how to practically apply it. Then you'll practically apply it, then contemplate what you've done. Then that will give rise to a further application. But you have to know what your goal is. That's why we're mentioning here. If you don't know that it's Sarvadharma Paritya, then how will you get there? Because if it's no, I'm practicing not just a secondary or a legend, probably a you know, how you say, means you have tertiary, quaternary, how do you get like 10th? You know, how you say it?
Decimary.
Yeah, decimary. Your decimary process, like that, then how are you ever going to get to that primary? Because if you don't know what the goal is, you actually can't apply something properly. Sambandhagyan means you have to have the knowledge, you have to have the right attitude, you have to know what the goal is, and you have to know what the right process is. If you don't know all these four, and while you're applying it in Abhideya, you're not using the knowledge of all those four, you will fail, guaranteed. So you have to have that knowledge. So how will you come to prema or pure devotion if you don't have pure devotion as the goal? So the things, the religious processes that are recommended in relation in support of pure devotion are rejected for those that are based simply on bodily the concept. How will that bring one to that platform? Because if you can't give up anything for Krishna, then how will you fully surrender to Krishna? Then immaturity that there'll just be some magic will happen. Or the immaturity that it's not actually about that, it's just tasting that aren't we so great. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have a bunch of friends and they decide that they're going to get into something, that looks interesting, right? Now, the first thing they naturally do following the Western Paddhati is go out and buy all the paraphernalia and the clothes and whatever it is that makes you one of those. Right? Then, when you get together with your friends and you all got on the stuff, you look at each other with that all-knowing look like, yeah, no, we're happening and all that. And as you go by everybody else on the road, how they're just out of it and how good you are and, hey, aren't they checking it out? But is it about the thing itself? So that's the whole problem. As soon as we go, we're Westerners, then it's not about the devotional process. It's about how aren't we so cool that we don't do all the devotional stuff? You know? We're so advanced, we don't need all that, you know? We don't need authority. We don't need tradition. Right? We just need our own mental speculation. You understand? So it's actually atheism. But due to nice packaging, it sounds like it's something special. That's the advantage of the Pranamoya and New Age and all that. It's just nice packaging of just self-centeredness. That's why it's called extended sense gratification. So even if you use more sophisticated words, it doesn't make it any better. In fact, many don't even get out of that position. Right? Within those in Anamoy, you have those who are in Anamoy that is obvious. Then you have those who are sophisticated. Let's say like a connoisseur. Right? He's very expert in his wines or his food or whatever it is that he is. But he's still just sophisticated Anamoyist. Or scientists. They're just sophisticated Anamoyists. They don't even come to the platform of the social of Pranamoy where it's about how everybody can be involved in this. You know, it's not about how can everybody get such good quality wine. No, he couldn't care less. In fact, better they don't because there's less for him. Mm-hmm. Right? How many, you know, 1961 of, you know, this and that is there?
He'll be less special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then it won't be special anymore. So that's the whole point, is let everybody be special, then it's not special anymore. So, for me. Yes.
I heard that Prabhupada was saying that my management is Western or American, so apparently he did appreciate the managerial style of the Western world. So how do...
No, okay, well, no, I'm just saying, let's just, in approaching that, what's the point we're making here? Why would we use that as an example? What are we trying to get at? What's the actual doubt?
Well, that there is something useful in the Western style which could be applied in Krishna consciousness. Maybe it's Vedic, but it's kind of something which is not so much happening in India, for example. Like being punctual, for example.
Yeah, but if you want to talk punctual, then we got to talk German and Japanese. And so the others may be punctual, but they're not. In Germany or Japan, if the it's a disaster if the train was 30 seconds late. Mm. It comes in the newspaper.
Yeah.
In America, that would never happen. So punctual means, you know, within a few minutes. So where does the punctuality come from? It comes from, how you say, culture, right? Which comes from tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So that means those who are from those kind of cult, they're there because of, that's the proper thing to do. If we're talking about the business, the general thing, then that's only because economically it looks more viable if you show up, you look like you're cultured. Mm-hmm. It's not that they are. They just do it because that's the proper thing to do, because that would make you look bad. Then there are those who are going to show up and be punctual. It doesn't matter. You know, even if they're taking their kid out to the zoo, they'll be there on time. It's not about making money. So that comes from tradition and culture. Those people who are coming from that background then will be able to see that anywhere. So if you're in America and then use those terms and use those things there, then that would be the valuable. But the point is what are those based on? They're based on the culture. So because Prabhupada's cultured, he can see that. He's using American management to advantage. Are the Americans using American managed to advantage? I don't think so.
To their advantage.
To their own personal advantage, yes. But to management as a society. Bureaucracy, when does that advance the whole society? It only advances those who are in the position. Because bureaucracy means it's easy for them. It comes on my desk, I deal with it. It doesn't come on my desk, I don't deal with it. I don't think beyond what's on my desk. And if it comes on my desk, what's the easiest way to deal with it? That all papers that come on my desk, they should all be in one category of how to deal with. So I'm always changing the rules how everybody should put things on my desk. It has nothing to do with the people who are putting things on your desk.
Yeah.
So if you'll notice, Prabhupada didn't like bureaucracy. So therefore, when we say that we're taking the Western things, that means, are we? When I'm saying, oh, we're attached to this, what I was talking about, are we actually taking what's cultured? Oh, we're being Western gentlemen. But are we being gentlemen?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Would someone who knows what is a gentleman, would they say that what we're doing is that of a gentleman? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is are we actually doing it? And why would we want to be a gentleman? Because you're supposed to be cultured. Again, we go back to the whole, it all goes back to religion. Because religion is culture. You follow, because that's the law, you follow it, that's what works. You talk with someone nicely, you get that result. You talk nicely, you get a different result. So the culture is the religion. Then there's a philosophy behind the religion. But we're trying to take the philosophy without the religion. So Prabhupada calls that mental speculation. And then those who will take the religion without the philosophy. But the point is if you look at, it's just here in India, it's what's here is it's obvious. Right? Means the things that aren't working nicely and all are obvious. But let's say we go to New York. You go down the main roads, they look pretty good. Fifth Avenue, Lexington, Third, you know, parts of Broadway. But you go back in between these streets, it's just slum. You go to Brooklyn, it's just slum. It's like stuff that hasn't been taken, maintained for decades. Just the weather over there isn't as severe as here. If the weather like this was here in New York, it would look worse than Calcutta. You know what I'm saying? So this whole thing is you can always find all these things. You know, it's like that. In Paris, there's a road, I don't know, it's a particular road. anything that's not considered standard is outside that road. I think one of the kings made that road. And so all the artists, everything else is outside that road, and inside is all your dignified, all that stuff. So it's just, it's understood that there's always going to be the problem, and then there's going to be, it's just that, you know, it's just here, you just, everybody's everywhere, so you see. But if you know what culture is, you can find it. You know what management is, you can find it.
Yeah, in terms of America, it's pretty clear. It's a melting pot, and first, you know, they started like a Wild West, and they still remained. But in terms of like Japan and Switzerland, for example, that somehow, you know, for Japanese, Dharma is so valuable. We don't see it here so much. I mean, very, very few examples, but in Japan it's like...
No, but the point is you have to know where to look. You have to know where to look. It's like, how much are we there on the street in Japan and just living there that we start to see all the little details? It's just here, it's just more easy to see because there's less false ego. You know, it's a matter of hiding it. Like I was explaining the other day, I was in Bloomingdale's in New York, went to the counter. The girl, you know, is able to put on all the energies and everything like that. She picks up something, she drops it. You know, first she'll, you know, make some kind of thing, like to, you know, a little act, then she'll bend over, pick it up, then she'll bring it back, and then it'll go back. Yeah, because, so didn't break character the whole time. I was in Poland, went to a shop, went into the shop. The girl puts on the energy, this and that. She picks up the thing, she drops it. All the energy goes off. What just happened and this and that? Completely out of character. Goes, picks it up, this, that, checks it, it's okay. And all that, everything goes back into character, then starts selling. So all it is the West, they're very expert at keeping in character. As if they know. This is like, if you come out of the subway in New York and you don't know where you're going, you have to look like you know where you're going. Otherwise, you're finished. But here you can come out and not know what you're doing, and people come up, you need some direction, and this, they'll be nice. So it's a matter of survival over there. You know, like that. So then it just appears that it's not. But here it's just there. But those, because that's just the way, you know, the variety of people are. Some people like things more organized, some people less. So due to bad management and that, then you see more of the less, because it's not being controlled like it should be. Like that, you know what I'm saying? So, but what is that coming from? That's coming from the modern. When there was less of the modern, it was more controlled. It usually the tradition. It's just like, let's say, another example. Let's say you have Central and South America, okay? And they got gold and silver coming out their ears. In fact, they just use it for ordinary utensils, right? And then some guys that never take a bath show up on a ship, right? Half the people die from the diseases that these, you know, how you say, two-legged rats are carrying, right? And then they walk off with all their gold, take it back to Europe. Now those guys that have no natural resources now have money. And then these guys that, now that they have the money, now they criticize these guys from Central and South America that they're uncultured, they're poor, they're just desperate, and, you know, like that, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing, is that we have to be very, very careful about working on that. Somehow or another, West means it's better. But it's these things that are going on. They've been over in the Orient since, you know, forever. Like that. All these different things, what to do, how to do, and everything like that. They've always been more sophisticated, more developed. Like that. You know, it's just, does that make sense? But once these other cultures get up to, they're able to relate to these, then they take over, right? And any, you know, general area and education and all these things that take intellectual, it's always Indians and Orientals that are the main people. It's not that there aren't Westerners that aren't smart, but they're the ones that always come take over because they have a culture that supports more development of the, you know, brain and relationships and stuff like that. means we say the American model in business, but that's based on the Japanese model.
Yeah.
You know, so like that is that. The bottom line is whatever works, works. So now if you're taking it from that point and that's where you can apply it, people can relate to it, you use it from there. But you have to know what its goal is. Otherwise, you still won't be able to use it. Otherwise, you have all these self-help conferences. A thousand people go, 2,000 people go. They hire stadiums, they hire huge things. How many people become successful? There's more success books on the shelves now than ever before, but are people actually more successful? No. You know, the saying, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, is still there. It doesn't... You understand? So, those who know, they know. It means discussing these points that we're discussing here, if you went and discussed it with someone who is actually from generationally successful and rich, they'd understand and they'd accept it. It's the modern context of where those who would like to be, they're the ones that don't. They're educated, they have the potential, but haven't achieved it yet. They're the ones that talk like this. Those who are actually successful, they understand that. Because it's laws, it's religion. So what I'm saying is to go against religion and say that by my non-religion, I will come to the platform of the topmost religion. It's like, how does that go? You're not even using religion. How you get there? I mean, of course, Moksha Dharma is a dharma, but is that, do we want to actually count it like that? We don't want to say, but if I say atheistic, if I say, anti-authority, you know, and all these things, unless it's, what's that big fancy word? Anti-something establishment.
Anti-disestablishment team.
Yes. If you use that one, then some people might think, okay, that's cool. But maybe generally only baby boomers would pull that one out. And even they'll forget, right? You know, so the principles that we're trying to get to is that there's the ultimate dharma. Then all other dharmas are in support of that. So then there's the ultimate dharma. Then there's the recommended dharmas. Then you use, understanding the principle, whatever situation you're in, you use that dharma. But know where it comes from and what's the higher. Otherwise, if you say, no, it's all right for us to stay here, we don't have to change. It's then, why wouldn't you change? Means in a relationship you adjust, you change. That's the whole point of relationship. So it's about Krishna. Why wouldn't you change? No, we're Westerners. We don't have to change. So then who has to change? If you want to make a relationship, Krishna has to change. So how is that devotion? You understand? So it's very weak. It sounds great, but it's actually weak because it's based on atheistic, anti-authority, anti-tradition. That's the foundation of it. And then how will that be useful as principles in devotional service? But it'll be, no, but we're using pants. But it's not about pants. Because then you like pants, wear pants. Someone likes a dhoti, they'd wear a dhoti. If we're talking about do whatever you like, someone likes a dhoti, no, but the guy wearing the pants will criticize the guy wearing a dhoti. In fact, I heard one devotee went to the temple. You know, he was invited to give class, went in his dhoti in that, and they said, you can't give a class here unless you're wearing pants. You know, because we don't want to disturb the minds of those who go around naked during the, carnival. Yeah.
They always use the argument for preaching because people cannot relate to this.
Yeah, and that's why every one of those people who are saying that joined, even though there were no pants at that time. Every last one of them, they joined. There were no pants. They all joined. So that's not a... That doesn't fly.
They themselves disprove it.
Yes, they disprove it, and the whole point is that everybody wears pants, so why would they think your pants are better? You know, if they're Versace, okay, then we'll talk, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, like the Shankaracharya's first buy Versace, then we'll talk. You know, otherwise, this other stuff, they don't even look. I saw one article, when it was a whole presentation on how, you know, the dress codes and this and that. And this one lady was going, wow, this is really nice. It's like that. There's some standard, it'll look good, and this and that. And they're thinking, this is really nice. And that, and everyone thinks, wow, okay, she's supporting all this. And then she says, but there's one problem. I have not met one person that follows this. Mm. Therefore, they all look like slobs. So what's the use of putting out this? Because it's about people doing what they want. Not because otherwise, if everybody has to follow a dress code according to modern Western standards, who wants to do that? Because the whole basis is, I'm Western, I do what I like. Not I'm Western, I follow the Western norms of high-class dressing. That's not the basis at all. It's all about, I do what I like, I eat what I like. You know? So if I'm an American and I eat Mexican food, that's what I like to do. And I'll put, you know, Tabasco sauce on it, which is hot, but, I, you know, give me an Indian sabji, I can't eat that because it's got spicy and it's not my food. You know what I'm saying? So it's about me doing what I want, not about following standards. Because otherwise, if they set standards, then what's the difference between them setting those standards and us setting standards? So the difference is who sets the standards? Our standards are set by the acharyas. Their standards are set by somebody who says that, you know, the polo shirt should have 4 buttons, you know, and then you can leave 1 or 2 undone. But if you only have 2 buttons, you leave it undone, it doesn't look proper. It looks like you didn't do the buttons. You know, so then you compromise with 3 buttons, then okay, then that's there. But then, you know what I'm saying? It goes on. You know, do they have the extra thing in the back or not? Does the polo shirt get tucked in or not? You know, that means who's right?
How far down are the sagging pants?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's all that, you know. But then if they're too sagging, don't wear a chain. Otherwise, they will fall off. You know, so that's the whole problem is that, so you can say all these things, but what's the standard? So then it comes down to anybody just does what they want, and if they do what they want, they don't follow a standard. So it's impossible to establish. Like that. So you just want to avoid that. Okay, so we're clear on Bhagavad Dharma means that that means it's about pleasing Krishna, nothing else. So pure devotion as Rupa Goswami defines it. Then you use all the other recommended dharmas, like study of Shastra, Brahmacharya, Varnashram, austerity, all these different things. We use those to serve the Lord, right? To express that Bhagavad Dharma. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sutta 133. Nanu manam tach chabdata. Na, not anumanam, that which is inferred. Atat, not that. Atat, not that. Chabdata, because of a word. Chabdat. In the previous one, then it said vyapade chat. Is that supposed to be that?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, that's correct. Pradana cannot be meant because of the words refer to a conscious entity. Right? So, yes. Sutra Prakashika. After giving direct evidence to support the contention that Atma corresponds to Brahman. Now, right, Atma corresponds to Brahman, then the jivas, they are then going to that which is beyond. Now the sutrakar presents indirect evidence showing that the alternatives are unfeasible. Right? So the direct is Brahman, Atma is Brahman. He is the goal that's attained for those who are liberated jivas. So that's direct. Now he goes into indirect that it can't be these others. Specifically, this sutra dismisses the contention of the Purvapaksha that the being in question is Pradhan, or Pradhan is insentient. For Pradhan is insentient. Sri Govindabhasya. Nanumanam atach chabdat. Pradhan cannot be meant because some of the words refer to a conscious entity. The proposed Pradhan cannot be meant in the passage. Why? Because the passage does not contain any words that refer to the unconscious Pradhan. touch shabdat, whereas it contains words like omniscience that refer to a conscious being. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're referring to that Mundaki Upanishad verse. Right? Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. Shabdat. Oh, shabda. The spiritual sound of the Vedas does not present material nature as the goal of Vedic Dharma. Right? So people are following, they want a result in that. Right? I follow the Dharma, I will get a result with it's manipulation of the material energy. I will get a result within that material energy. So that's why these dharmas, these aren't the top dharmas. Because all these 12 will give you results within the material energy. While the supreme dharma, that's dealing with the supreme, that will give you results in the supreme. So it's something different. That's why it has to be the primary. And then use these other religions as secondary to express the primary. So when we talk about just surrender to Krishna, that doesn't mean you give up the other dharmas in practice. You give them up as that is the primary dharma. The pure devotion to Krishna is the primary dharma. The other ones are secondary used to express it. Right?
Yes. Yeah, another example to address this question is the milk-drinking brahmachari in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that Lord Chaitanya chastised. He wasn't feeling ecstasy in the rasa dance because he was there walking.
Because he only drove the... Yes, that's a very good example. In Srivast Thakur's house. Yes. Yeah, that's right. You know that story. Yeah, so that's it. They get a pride in their particular the thing. So they are advanced in that. They are purified. So they have followed it very strictly, and they have gotten the results within that, but the results are still within the material. He's very purified. You know, his existence... I remember, I think it was one devotee was saying he was on the train with these sadhus. I think they were yogis. They were going to Kumbh Mela or something. And they were all they took was milk and fruit. They didn't eat anything else. And they'd been like that for a long time. You know, this is not, 6 months, so that's, 10, 20, 30 years or like this. And he said that they smelled nice. And as sadhus, they wouldn't be wearing it. They just smelled nice. They just, because their bodies were so pure. So that's the thing, is that these recommended dharmas will simply get an external result. And so then that external result, that can be engaged in Krishna's service. But the point is sannyasa means it's already about Krishna, and then that means the results as they come are already Krishna's. That'll be the difference. Because otherwise you follow your so-called modern dharmas, but you'll only get a result in modernity. You won't get it somewhere else. And so then is that the result you want to offer to Krishna? Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16:51. All living entities, moving and non-moving, are my expansions and are separate from me. I am the supersoul of all living beings who exist because I manifest them. I am the form of the transcendental vibrations like Omkara and Hare Krishna Hare Rama, and I am the supreme absolute truth. These two forms of mine, namely the transcendental sound and the eternal blissful spiritual form of the deity, are my eternal forms. They are not material. Right, so he's pointing out that because Pradhan is material and not conscious, and he is non-material and conscious. So that's the meaning that, because it mentions consciousness and it has to be an ultimate goal, that means it can only be the transcendental. So the transcendental conscious being is the... Because otherwise, if he's not a being, then how do you get the forms like he has, as the verse mentions? Mm-hmm. Yes.
So can we say that their purvapakshas are actually in ignorance?
Yes. They're in ignorance, but, there's some knowledge that they're using, but as we mentioned, is that there is the element, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So the philosophy will be interpreted to support that. So I want to be the controller and enjoyer as the supreme. So then you're going to have to show how the jiva is Brahman, or Prabhupada is Brahman. Something is Brahman other than the Lord. Now, if you're a karmi, then you're going to show that I'm the controller and that I'm in control. I make things happen. I have money. I'm successful. I therefore am enjoying. Right? So you'll have to perform. If we say, but you're so busy working 12 hours a day, 16 hours a day, when do you enjoy? They won't want to hear that. So they'll finesse that. Yeah, but when I do go on vacation, yeah, but then you add up, okay, everybody else does 40 hours a week, and you do, you know, 60, 80 hours a week. So how, you know, where do you enjoy? You know what I'm saying? If you add it all out, then the other guy sitting down and watching a soapy for half an hour, he actually gets more overall enjoyment than you get by going out for 3 days on your yacht. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, so they don't want to hear that. So that's the whole point, is in the philosophy. Then that comes up. Footnote 13. In his commentary to this verse, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur paraphrases the words of the Lord Narayana as he addresses Chitraketu Maharaj. I will now teach about jnana in order that you become indifferent to questioning. Right? Because there's questioning where you're trying to understand the connection to the Lord. There's questioning that you're just interested, like the jigyasu and the jnani. But ultimately, it's not about knowing. It's about serving. And that experience is gained from that. But the point is that person is in full knowledge, but it's not about the questioning itself. We take it, oh, if you're questioning, you think that's the higher principle. It's higher than not questioning, but it's not as high as knowing. Like that. And therefore, the knowing has come to the point of realization where there's experience. That's why then knowledge is one of the dharmas in support of the ultimate dharma. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Please listen. You should consider this. There are two types of objects, permanent and temporary. There are three eternal objects, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, with his associates. The essential, because Brahman doesn't have associates, Paramatma doesn't have associates. Bhagavan, therefore Bhagavan is Bhagavan because he has associates. So that's why the two will go together. Yes, because here you see the insentient universe made of matter is the temporary object. There are two types of unreal objects, experienced and unexperienced. The experienced unreal objects consist of dreams and magic. The unexperienced unreal objects consist of imaginary objects like a flower in the sky or a rabbit with horns. Like that. Yeah. How do you say? Monty G missed the the flower in the sky. The first canto of Bhagavatam says that the permanent object is the best. Vedyam vastava atra vastu. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2. In order to speak about the permanent object, first, the impermanent objects are described. I am all beings. I am the universes consisting of the jivas and their enjoyed objects. Since I am non-different from my Maya Shakti and my Jiva Shakti, the jivas are called temporary objects in this case because of their covering of ignorance. They're acting temporary in that. So everything that they're dealing with that we try to control and enjoy is the Lord. But we don't see it as the Lord. So that's why it's a dream. And we think everything's just going to happen by magic. Right? It just happens. Right? So it falls in love. It's magic. They fall out of love. Not as great a magic. Magic nonetheless.
It's the black magic.
The black magic. Yeah. Gives rise to the black magic. What do you call it? The different sticks and all the different colored sticks. No, that's even heavier than that. It's another one. That one, but then they have one where they have the pot and everything in the pot and then all the sticks, all the different colors. That one's... Okay, so Now, so there within the temporary, because Pradhan is there, they're identifying with Pradhan, acting within that matter, Pradhan, the transformations of Pradhan, they're actually not what they expect them to be. They call them the experience. Oh, I've experienced it, but what have they actually experienced? They've experienced the Lord, but they think it's the temporary. So therefore, it's all temporary. But as soon as you know that what I'm experiencing is the Lord, then you're dealing with the real. That's why the situation doesn't change. But it's about higher consciousness, about putting the consciousness on the Supreme, not, oh, we don't have to change anything, and I'm a Westerner, so put it on myself. You're supposed to put the consciousness on the Lord, not ourselves. See, there's a philosophical weakness in that approach. The permanent object is then explained.
I was just remembering one point Devamrita Maharaj makes. He says, unlimited ecstatic bliss only exists in two places. One is the spiritual world, the other is in your imagination.
Yes, very good point. So that's the point here. Yeah. Yes, the dream. The what do you call it? Dreams and magic. Yeah. Yeah. And then that's the problem, is that they'll give the unexperienced unreal and then try to turn that into the dreams.
Yeah. You know?
The permanent object is then described, right? So that's why you always see it starts off with how he is everything, he's the source of everything, he's beyond everything, he's control of everything, you know, he's what everyone's looking for. You always start that way because then you negate the unreal, right? Then it talks about him as a person and what he does, you know. Like that. The permanent object is then explained. I am the second and third Purushas, the Antaryami of all the Jivas in the universe, and the Antaryami of the individual jiva. And I met, second and third Purushas, right? So the second is Garbhodaksha. He's the Lord of all the jivas. Yeah. Then he's the Lord within the individual jiva. Mm. Right? So when it's talking about the universal form, it means these two Purushas. Right? The first Purusha, he's the primary creation. But the second and third Purushas, they're the secondary creations.
The Samasti and Vyasti
Parama. Ah, these two.
Yeah.
Samasti, okay, and Vyasti. Vyasti means the
one that's split into all the jivas.
Okay, the individual. And Samasti means the overall.
Yeah,
because you have the overall principle of, let's say, childhood or childness. That'll be Garbhodaksha Vishnu. But the Lord in the heart of that individual child, that will be Kiradaksha Vishnu. So that's the Vyasti. And then Samasti would be the overall. So that makes sense. And I manifest all these beings, right? So we went from the Brahman platform dealing, now we're getting into the Paramatma platform. Right? And I manifest all these beings, Bhuta Bhavanaha. I am the first Purusha. Okay, that means, so manifesting the jivas so that they come out, you know, they're in that position in the in Mahatattva, as on the Vasudeva Sattva platform, that the primary creation is there, all the options that are there, whatever can be there, is all there in that primary creation with the first Purusha. Right? Then he enters into the individual universe, that's taken to each universe. Then Brahma then creates, and then the Lord enters into everything. So then you get, so then in this way he's all of the Paramatmas. Right?
What is the technical term for the first position? Like we have Samasti, Vyasti.
Because you're using the material intelligence, so then you would have these two divisions. Because those Vyasti and Samasti, these are what the functions of the intelligence. Right? So then he's beyond that. He's the source of that. And I bestow these jivas with various bhavas, such as Dasya and Sakya, Bhuta Bhavanaha. I am the Vedas, right? So now we're going back into the... I am the Vedas, Shabda Brahman, which are my breathing. Right? So If we have a problem with the Vedas, then we have a problem with Krishna's breathing. It's not
mint.
Good, you know. Mint. Hold your breath. You know, it's just like you're saying, hold that breath. I am the impersonal Brahman realized by jnanis. These are my two forms. There may be a fear that the Vedas are not eternal since they are a form of sound related to ether, which is material. There may be a fear that like that, so someone may have that, right? Okay. There may be a fear that Para Brahman is unreal since it is not definable by words. To remove these doubts, it is said these two are eternally existing. Sardartha Darshani. Right? So these principles, I say, are not, I say. Because sound is manifest through these, but they're original. That's what nod is. It's before. Then it manifests. Right? And just because we can't define because they're unlimited, the qualities. We can only use words to give an indication. But that whole process and that is the Lord Himself. Brahman has unlimited qualities. That's why you can't describe it. You say, oh, you can't describe Brahman, but then it being indescribable is a quality. It's unlimited. It's a quality. It's unchanging. That's a quality. So it's still the qualities that can't, because they're unlimited, so words are limited. But they're beyond. But it gives an indication, so we know what to go for, how to progress.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanand ki.